Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids, going to cons is our.
Everybody, it's the Long Box guys, and we're very happy to be with you again today. With me, as always, is my good friend Josh. Josh, how you doing, and what you drinking?
Tonight, I'm drinking St. Peter's Old Style Pub Porter, and might I add that once you're done drinking it, they do make great prop bottles, so if anybody's looking for potion bottles or steampunk stuff, it's a drink and use. It's a reusable item.
The drink you can use. Excellent. Mikey, how are you doing, and what are you drinking?
I am doing excellent tonight, and I am drinking what I call a red tornado. It is cranberry juice, vodka, and seltzer water.
Hey, let's use that for the book. I like that, the red tornado. And Tommy, how are you doing, my friend, and what are you drinking?
I am doing well, and I am drinking some 12-year-old Cardew scotch.
Good man. I myself have a nice big tumbler full of Bushmills because I can, and I like it, and it's tasty, and it's in my giant Skywalker glass. And tonight, we're going to be talking about poison ivy, speaking of the poison we're putting into our bodies. Mikey, do you want to give us a background on poison ivy?
Sure. Poison ivy was created by Robert Kanniger and Sheldon Moldoff to be one of Batman's femme fatales. She first appeared on April 19th, 1966 in Batman issue number 181. She's had multiple origins over the years, but the most prominent one was when Pamela Isley interned for two of the greatest botanists in the DC universe, Dr. Alec Holland and Dr. Jason Woodrow. The shy, timid Isley is experimented on by Woodrow, injecting her with poisons and toxins, causing her to transform into the poison ivy. In the New 52, her latest origin, has Dr. Isley as a botanist working in the cosmetic division of Wayne Enterprises. She accidentally spills some experimental chemicals on herself, which gives her powers. Either origin, she's now immune to all natural toxins and diseases and could put out spores that act like a pheromone. She can poison people with her lips. Last episode, I think we talked about Alec Holland, whose psyche was absorbed by the Earth Elemental, the Swamp Thing, and Jason Woodrow, who transformed himself into the Floronic Man. Like both those characters, Poison Ivy can communicate with the Green, which is a mystical ley line that connects all plants. She has control over plants, can make them grow, and can also talk to them. Poison Ivy is a self-described eco-terrorist. She has little regard for human life, but has formed a friendship with Catwoman and a friendship with benefits with Harley Quinn, because like every female Batman villain, she has to be a bad girl bisexual. Poison Ivy never appeared on the Batman 1966 TV show, but has been in all the Batman animated series, as well as being played by Uma Thurman in the forgettable 1987 Batman and Robin, or as I like to call it, Bat Nipples. Fun Alec fact, Robert Kanniger modeled Poison Ivy after pinup model Betty Page.
Ooh, that is a fun Alec fact.
I got a callback for casting for Batman and Robin when they claimed they were looking for a non-actor. And a videotape went to the director. I was the only person in Boston. Side fact.
I'm guessing that's exciting. Non-acting role.
Wow. In retrospect, I guess I'm kind of glad I didn't get it. That movie was awful.
But you could have little Robin nipples.
It's true. I could have had Robin nipples. True that.
Poison Ivy, at one time or another, has battled most of the major heroes in the DC Universe. She was a member of the Injustice Gang, the Suicide Squad, the Secret Society of Supervillains, and the Sierra Club. She co-starred with Catwoman and Harley Quinn in the Gotham City Sirens, which Warner Brothers plans to make a movie in the next couple years. The current rumor has Jessica Chastain of Zero Dark Thirty fame playing Poison Ivy.
Just a quick side note. When you said that, like, all Batman femme fatale. She has to be a bad girl bisexual. The reason we say that is because one of our good friends, the femme fatale down in New Orleans, often talks about how these characters that are bisexual have to also be bad girls. Anyone have anything to add to that? No? All right. I forget what's that young lady's name, Mike? She's down there near you.
It's Emily Roldan.
Emily Roldan. She's a terrific writer, terrific blogger, terrific podcast, and she has a lot to talk about when it comes to how bisexuals are portrayed in comic books. Well, someone must have a favorite run. Josh, what's your favorite run?
When you said someone, you weren't talking about me. like I said, I was a latecomer to the whole DC thing, mostly because of recommendations from Mike. I've started to ramp up on some of the Rebirth stuff and some of the new characters, and mostly it was Books of Magic for me. So Poison Ivy didn't really cross paths with a lot of characters I read. I like the concept of the green, that the whole world sort of intertangled through the through vegetation throughout the world. And the characters that come out of it are pretty cool, but I just haven't done a lot of reading on it.
I'm not a huge fan either. She never captured my attention or imagination. Neither did really Catwoman. Those two characters just kind of, you know, I always knew they were around. Those two Batman villains, but they just really didn't do too much for me. I did like Anne Hathaway as the Catwoman. I'll say that, of course. But I did really enjoy fighting her in the DC Universe online game. She was one of the more memorable boss fights because she had this giant tree-like thing that was her tank, and she was also casting buffs on her tank and also casting kind of thorns and other spells, spell-like abilities at you. So you had to, take care of the tank, get the tank down, and then get her for a while. And it was a good boss fight. That's the most I can really say about Poison Ivy. Mikey, what do you have to say about this character?
Well, she was in Justice League of America number 111, which was my first superhero comic, so I've always had a fondness for her.
Was that your favorite run?
No, it wasn't. I'd have to say the Gotham City Sirens was probably my favorite run. If you want to check it out, you should go. You can find them in bargain bins. They were not very big sellers or anything, but I just like the whole interaction with her and the other people. She's only had one solo series, which was called Poison Ivy, The Cycle of Life and Death. It was written by Amy Chu with art by Clay and Seth Mann. In the series, Ivy creates plants and human hybrids, which she refers to as her children. Chu depicts her as somewhere between animal and vegetable, and I know we don't diss what we hate here, but I was not a big fan of this this run. They tried to make her the main character, but she killed without any regard for human life. In fact, at one point, she killed a guy because he kept on hitting on her.
So the popularity of the character, like I know we're talking about a singular villain, which we don't often do, especially one who's only had a pretty short run of her own comic. But I will say that she has an unusual amount of popularity in the world of cosplay.
Yep, I'll agree with that.
Yeah, I concur.
So we often play this little game that we like to call cosplay bingo, or we pick a cosplay character, and we're at a convention, and we count them, and we try to see who, gets the most. Harley Quinn was, a super easy one for a long time. Harley Quinn, you were going to see dozens and dozens and dozens. Lately, Bob's Burger, the little girls from Bob's Burgers have really been coming up. I've been seeing a ton of them, but you can always do well if you pick Poison Ivy also, because you'll see dozens and dozens of them too.
So I think part of her appeal is that she's been in all of the Batman animated series, and that's a lot of TV. They've had a lot of Batman animated series, and a lot of them have been very good and watchable. And I think that's part of why she's so popular in the cosplay circles, is that she really has had a decent amount of airtime. For me personally, my favorite was this. Poison Ivy is kind of a character who's used to being in control of things. she gets her way by being in control of plants. And yet in Detective Comics 823, which was written by Paul Dini, the plants are attacking Poison Ivy, and she doesn't know why. And as it evolves, it gets back into the whole her callously killing people that are part of the cause. And it was a really good issue, and I really liked it. And that's what I would highly recommend if you're looking for a good Poison Ivy story.
All right, yeah, I didn't really read that one myself, but it's one I might look up. That's everybody, isn't it? I guess that was kind of a short one.
Yeah, I mean, I think LT brings up a good point about the airplay. As far as the animation time she got was probably a lot more than comic time. They used her a lot, even in Unlimited and regular Justice League. She kept coming back with giant sized plants to crush the universe. So, yeah, that's a good one. Good call.
And you know, in her roles, she does have this kind of power dynamic where she's able to control men, which, you know, is something that a lot of women don't have in real life. A lot of times they're in situations where they're not in control, as we can see with wage disparity and such. And so, you know, that could be a really appealing thing to people. And it's a relatively easy cosplay.
All right, then, moving on. Mike, what do you got at the front of the long box for me?
Tra-la-la, la-la-la, 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 la-la-la.
One banana, two banana, three banana, four. Four banana makes a split, and so do many more. That's all I got.
It's more than I had.
That's plenty.
That's pretty good.
Thanks.
Yeah, I've got the Suicide Squad Banana Splits Special. It was an excellent little read. Tony Bedard was the writer for the first story. Ben Caldwell, Mark Morales, and Jeremy Lawson were the artists for the first story. And that one revolved around the banana splits are late for a gig. They get pulled over by the police, and they're like, take off your costumes. And they're like, these aren't costumes. These are us. And they're like, oh, no, they're metahumans. So they call in, we've got a metahumans, and start shooting at the banana splits. They jump on the other side of the car. They're like, man, we really don't like getting shot at. And do you guys remember the elephant's name?
Snorky.
That's right. Snorky gets really upset and starts raging against the cops, which you don't want a big elephant to get upset at you. The federal authorities come in, snatch him up, and send him to Belle Reve. Meanwhile, Amanda Waller's Suicide Squad has, they've lost contact with him on a mission to destroy a bunch of robots that look like little girls. So they need somebody expendable to go in to rescue the Suicide Squad, and she chooses the banana splits. They arm them with all sorts of weapons. They show up, and of course, hilarity ensues. My favorite part of the story was as they're getting introduced into the Belle Reve prison, they're walking down the row of all the inmates, and one of them's yelling, here comes the furry convention. And another guy with Nazi tattoos on is saying, you boys need help with them zippers. So that was disturbing and funny.
disturbing and funny.
So it was a good time. However, surprisingly, even though I enjoyed the story, it wasn't as good as the backup feature, which was Snagglepuss, being written by the same guy who writes the Flintstones, Mark Russell. It was drawn by Howard Porter and Steve Buscello and Dave Sharp. He is testifying. It's set in Washington, D.C., 1954, and Snagglepuss is testifying at the House Committee on Un-American Activities. And it is just great. Snagglepuss is a southern theater actor, and his
let's say Dandy. Say Dandy.
Yeah, Dandy's a good word. The rapport is great. I'm just going to give you one example. The senator says, "Boy, what do you hope to gain by subverting your own country? Would you rather live in Soviet Russia?" And he says, I couldn't live anywhere that didn't have decent Southern food. You know, it's just all that kind of back talk, et cetera. Really good, and actually turns out to be really sad, his origin, just like everything this guy does. Once you think, okay, this is the direction it's going, you're like, oh, my God, what did he just do to me? So everybody should go pick up the Suicide Squad Banana Split Special, if only for the Snagglepuss story, which, God willing, he'll get his own series someday.
Let's hope. Well, that sounds pretty good. Tommy, you got anything at the back of the long box?
I do. I have Clockworks. That's spelled clock, and then works is spelled W-E-R-X. Volume 1 is called Forge, and it is a steampunk story involving mechs in London, 1899. And it's your typical story of big corporation that's trying to discover an alternative fuel source and take over the world, and a group of renegades who have stolen some mechs from the evil corporation who are trying to beat them to the alternative fuel source to stop them from taking over the world. And it's a great little story. And it has fantastic art in the background. Some of the action and some of the human action is not so great, but the backgrounds are fantastic.
And I'm sorry, I zoned out for half a second. Who wrote that?
That was written by Jason Henderson and Tony Salviaggio. And there's a bunch of other people that worked on it as well. Izu and Jean-Baptiste Hostash, who also worked on the art and stuff. It was a great little series if you like steampunk and if you like mechs.
And Tommy, as long as we're talking to you, do we have any letters from the Longbox Legion today?
Why, we do. How did you guess that we would have another letter for another week? So let us go to the letterbox.
Fun Alex fact, we don't actually have a box.
And the letter we have dudes this week. Dear Longbox guys, first time writer, long time listener, how is it possible with all the lame supervillains that Tom loves that you don't mention Goldface or the Demolition Team on your GL Villains podcast? Also, I would like more details about Josh and his friends conspiring to kill a dog in a national park. You can't just throw that out there and not explain it. Thanks, Rosie from Madison, Wisconsin. P.S. LT has the best taglines.
All right, well, you've definitely doctored this letter at least once, if not twice.
I don't know
the Demolition Squad.
The Demolition Squad, if memory serves, appeared like in the 1980s, like one or two issues. And I think the head of the Demolition Squad was named Rosie. So I don't know if this is a real letter or somebody messing with us on that. But yeah, Rosie and the crew were hired to go after Hal Jordan by a corrupt senator. They really are lame. And Goldface, his superpower was he was all gold, so the Green Lantern's ring couldn't affect him.
That's not the worst way to go. I'd be Yellow McYellowface if I was fighting a Green Lantern. I mean, that's like page one. All right. Well, I'm going to be a supervillain.
Dressed like a banana.
Yeah, dressed like a banana and split.
Ah, Josh, you can tell us the story.
Oh, really? Okay. It's a long and painful story, and I'll change the names to protect the innocent. Well, no one's really innocent. Anyway, me and several friends decide to go on. I'm really telling the whole story
note
on the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. The dog was innocent.
The dog is innocent.
Don't say no one was innocent. That dog was blameless in this.
We set off on a weekend hike in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. One of the people, we'll call him just some guy named Bob. has a dog who's a one of the big white fuzzy ones.
Polar bear.
No, not a. Anyway, a big white fuzzy dog. Probably about 100 pounds. And so, and old. And we start up this mountain. It's supposed to be a two-day hike to this nice little lake. And they rated it as like a fairly easy hike, which it was not. And so we get about halfway through the first day, and the dog just lies down and quits. So we're like, all right, let's give him an hour. We'll, you know, take a break. We'll eat some lunch. At this point, we've actually already had to lift him up like a couple of cliff faces and just to keep the dog going. And so we're sitting around. We wait an hour. Dog still won't move. We wait 3 hours. Dog still won't stand up. So we're thinking, the dog's lame. how are we going to get the dog out of here? So we start chit-chatting, and I'm like, well, two of us, me and my friend, we'll carry on. We'll go to the lake, and we'll see if there's anybody there who can help us. The rest of you guys will stay here with the dog, and we'll see you tomorrow. We'll just camp at the lake. Okay. So off we go. We end up going back. We get to the lake, and what do we see? A Boy Scout troop. So I'm thinking, all right, badges for everyone, patches for everyone. Let's go, Boy Scouts. So we get down there. I go to the troop leader, and I'm like, look, you guys, you got like 30 teenage boys here. Let's get them up this mountain and rescue this dog. Let's go. And the guy's like, no. I'm like, what? He's like, no, we can't help you. I'm like, I don't understand. You're the Boy Scouts. And he's like, yeah, I can't risk taking these kids up that mountain. And I was like,
brave. Brave is like the third thing. Thrifty. Mike, you know this. I'll be honorable.
yeah.
Thrifty, honest, brave. It's in there somewhere.
It's in there somewhere. And the only thing I get out of the guy is he loans me his cell phone so I can make a call out. So I call the local ranger station. And I'm like, hey, I got a dog stuck on the mountain. Can I get any help? And the guy's like, no, we're not coming out there for a dog. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, do you have a like a stretcher we can borrow? Like, just drive it up to the lake. There's a road like 2 miles from here. And he's like, yeah, it's getting pretty late in the day.
And it's our best stretcher.
So no help from those guys. The fire department basically gives me the same answer. We're not going out there for a dog. And no, you can't have our stretcher. Okay. So no one at the lake is helping us. Me and the other guy turn around. We're like, oh. I'm like, we can make it back before dark. So we get halfway back to the other camp, and he quits on me, just like the dog. He lies down, and he's like, I can't make it any further. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you seriously? We're going to camp on the side of – so we camp on the side of the mountain like in like the most uncomfortable, like just where you can like get stakes into the dirt and you're just basically lying on rocks. And that's how we slept. So we get up the next morning and I'm like, do you think you can make it? And he's like, yeah, okay, let's go. So we get up there. We get back to the camp. The other two guys still there with the dog. Dog hasn't moved. Okay. So somebody has – this is a long story. This is a long podcast at this point. So somebody has an old army hammock. Tom, you know the old army hammocks, right? They're just like
– absolute.
Like thin gossamer layers of razor blades that are somehow intermeshed, like the least comfortable thing. Unless you have something between you and the sleeping – and the hammock, you're in trouble. So – somebody has a hatchet. We chop down a couple of small trees. We use stretch a canvas. We stretch it over. We frame out a little thing, and then we put the dog on there, and we use the army hammock to lash him to the stretcher. And now we're going out. Now, granted, we're about 10, 12 miles in rough terrain. Not insurmountable here. Just, you know, a long, hard day, maybe a day and a half. So we start down the mountain. We get down maybe like 2 or 3 miles tops, and we've had to like rope rappel the stretcher down a couple of cliff faces, and the dog's making all, you know, being all pissy and moany. And finally, the owner of the dog breaks. He breaks, and he just starts to panic. And he's like, the dog's lame. We're just never going to get out of here. I'm like, never get out of here. Like, we're getting out of here. Like, we're not in the Arabian Desert. Like, we're like 8 miles from the car. Like, we're getting out. And we're bringing the dog. Like, we're not leaving this dog behind. Like, and he's like, no, this lame. He's like, I'm going to take it to the vet and they're going to put the dog down anyway. And so he's like, we should just put the dog out of its misery. And I was like, are you going to kill your own dog in the New Hampshire woods? And he's like, it's the only answer. I'm like, really? Because the other answer seems like 8 more hours of hard work to get your dog out of here alive. Don't get me wrong. It's 8 hours of hard work. If you don't think that's worth your dog's life. And so there's an argument ensues between everybody. And I lose that argument. And they're going to kill the dog. And someone's like, well, who's going to do it? And so one guy volunteers, and I won't say his name, but this is how I somehow describe him. Often in error, never in doubt. So he says he's going to stay behind and kill
the dog. Is a great way of describing that fellow.
And he's going to kill the dog. So the rest of us head on down the path, and we wait because the owner of the dog, Bob, doesn't want to be there. So we head off down the path, like maybe like 300 or 400 yards, and we wait. And time goes by. More time goes by than would take to kill a dog, because killing a dog should take you about 3 seconds. Anyway, I'm like, I'm worried that something has happened. I'm going to go back. So I start walking back, thinking to myself, if this person has failed or just injured the dog, now I'm going to have to kill the dog when I show up, because I, for some reason, know how to kill a goddamn animal and nobody else does.
You really should kill both at that point, just so you know.
They should both be put out of their miseries. So I get back, and before I get to the place where we left the dog, the person who was supposed to kill the dog is coming down the trail. I'm like, oh, job done. I can turn around. And I'm like, how was it? Was it terrible? And he's like, I didn't do it. And I was like, what'd you do? And he's like, I went to do it, but I took the webbing off the dog so I could get to his throat. And then I tried to do it, but I think I just cut him a little bit. And I'm like, so you freed the dog and then injured it and then left it there. And he's like, yeah. So now I'm pissed because now there's just an injured – now he's just wounded an animal and it's just out there in the woods. And so I just start charging the area. I'm running with my knife out. Thinking, I'm just going to kill this. I am so upset at this point, I would be willing to kill anything. So I get back to the place where he left the wounded dog, and guess what? There's no dog there. I'm like, oh, you got to edit that out. I'm like, hey, buddy.
Bald bastard.
Where's the dog? And he's like, this is where I left it. I'm like, where's the dog? And so I look around, we search around for about 10 minutes, and there's this big hill right next to the where we left him, and there's the dog standing of his own free will at the top of the hill, like he climbed a hill. So apparently it took a threat on the dog's life to get him to stand up and move, and that dog walked the rest of the way out.
And what did you have to tell the vet that you had to get the dog treated?
The owner of the dog lied and said the dog got caught in a barbed wire fence and cut his neck. And honestly, that was really all the damage the guy did. Like, it was like a half-inch nick on the dog's throat.
So instead of stabbing the dog repeatedly in the neck, he tried to slit his throat like he was metal sake snot solid.
Yes, he tried a movie, action movie, slit across the throat for a dog who's basically wearing a leather gorget instead of
all fur.
And just like 6 pounds of fur in the way. So basically, yeah, he moderately scared the dog into running his ass out of the woods before somebody actually put him down.
Well, that was a fascinating story.
In the equipment list? In the equipment list, wasn't there a hatchet mentioned?
That's not exactly the quickest way to kill an animal humanely, but sure. He also could have beat it to death with a club or thrown it off a cliff, but let's stick to what's simple and easy.
Well, Josh, you got a tangent to take us out on?
No, I don't.
I think that was enough of a tangent.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So, LT, how does one get a letter to the read on the air?
They would need to send a letter to Lucky Bastard at OutsideTheLongBox.com, and there's a chance that we would read their letter on the air. They will also be entered to win April's giveaway graphic novel of Morning Glories, Volume 1.
So, fun Jared fact, you and your friends tried to kill a dog.
Someone I know tried to kill a dog, and I would have killed a dog had I had to. But no, I just walked the dog out the rest of the way.
It'd be better if the dog killed that guy, and now you guys were in a horror movie.
Yeah. It's a rough weekend.
The dog now has a taste for human flesh.
All right, well, I had a quick little bit that I wanted to do on civil rights and social justice movements, but now I just want to talk about why not to stab a dog in the neck. But I did want to mention that today in the Huffington Post, a top executive for Marvel says that sales fell because readers didn't want female characters. That happened just today. That's been reported. Some Marvel execs are blaming the falling sales of Marvel Comics on the fact that they have many strong female characters, and they point to the reboot of Ghostbusters and some of the blowback that Star Wars got by having a woman be the lead in these two movies. Of course, there are many, many more voices of reason saying that the reason sales are falling is because people are reading comic books and other ways at the moment, or that this downtick might just be because all these new characters are being introduced and people don't know them yet, so the people aren't as invested in them.
I think when I look at Marvel and their sales recently, I got to say what I think are the biggest reactionary things are pretty much what forced me out of comics in the late 90s, early 2000s, and that is the crossover hell, right? Just having to read XYZ, like back in the day during the Mutant Massacre, I had to buy an issue of Power Pack to read that whole thing. We've talked about that before. And when they first started doing it, it was so confusing to readers. In the Mutant Massacre comics, there was literally a map, like a full-page advertisement that was a map of the comics you had to read and in what order you had to read them to get the whole story. And that was infuriating to me. And I can see why people would start abandoning that mentality. And Marvel Comics are, what, $4 now on the cover? That's, I think they're $3.99. That's getting up there.
Yeah, they're $3.99 or $4.99, depending on what comic you're reading. But I think they are underestimating the readers getting tired of all the events because they don't want to collect all those comics. They introduced a whole bunch of new characters, a diverse brand, but by doing it, they literally got rid of their main characters. Bruce Banner is no longer the Hulk. It is now the Totally Awesome Hulk, who is Amadeus Cho. Great, they've now made a character that everyone loved and diversified him. Rather than keeping that character and just keeping the Hulk as the Hulk and making Amadeus Cho just a super genius like he was and giving him his own comic. They did the same thing with Iron Man. Iron Man is now a black female prodigy. They've done the same thing with Captain America. Captain America got old. Sam Wilson took over. All this diversity. Now, that's a little bit of a different case because Sam Wilson has been an established character. But, again, what I go back to is Falcon was his own hero. He didn't have to take up the mantle of Captain America. He's the Falcon. You should be proud of being the Falcon. So all their main characters, Thor, Captain America, Hulk, you name it, they've all been replaced. And that is one of the reasons for their lagging sales, not because of the diversity. It's because instead of creating brand new characters that everybody's going to like Ms. Marvel, and just creating a good character and a good storyline, they're trying to put a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they're basically trying to carry the, just with trying with brand management to diversify rather than any sort of new or capitalize on new ideas, new trends, new characters. It's been a it's sort of a rough trip, and I agree somewhat that those characters should be preserved, or they just to do spin-offs, just branch the characters and have them both be out there, you know? There's no reason they're, you know, how many Hulks have there been over the years? You couldn't have one more Hulk with his own comic if you wanted to make, you know, keep Banner around. It's been rough going for them. I have a little bit of hope with the relaunch of X-Men Gold and Blue this week. I'm going to check those out. I wasn't super impressed with the prequel Prime books, but I'm kind of hoping... And actually, I don't really like the idea of the gold team, the X-Men out of time as the original team. But I'm going to give it a chance. I am going to pick them up this week and look at them.
Yeah, also go ahead, LT.
Also, you know, when I was reading comics, up until the Mutant Massacre started, you could pick up a comic and the story would start and end in that comic. Whereas now, everything is a 4-to-5-issue arc. So they're... Depending upon where you are, there may not be a good place for you to pick up that comic and just start reading. And in my mind, they should have at least kept some of these characters, or at least kept a title that is just, this is that story for that issue. And then you can do the 5 or 6 issue things in a different title. You know, I mean, how many Spider-Man titles do they have? You know, why can't you do that? Why can't you have 2 Iron Man titles where one is just the story begins and ends that month and the other one is a 5-issue arc?
I mean, I don't know. I like arcs, right? I like Claremont's writing was what is still some of my favorite. And he was doing 20-issue arcs, right? Like 2 years to get his point across. And I really enjoy that kind of writing. I can see what you're saying. But I don't know if breaking that into separate issues and sort of managing a character in both ways is really tenable for a comic that wants to continue.
Yeah, I see a lot of those one-off comic books as being too simplistic. But I do like the fact that my favorite comic book right now, Power Man and Iron Fist, they have a very long arc going on. But at the very beginning of the comic book, they have that one-page explainer. Always like that scream sheet.
G.W. Wilson, the creator of the latest Ms. Marvel, has a great response explaining why the diversity that they've done.
Where is that? Where can we find that?
If you do a Google search for G.W. Wilson responds to the diversity, you'll probably find it. She posted it on Twitter, or her response. She actually did a blog and then... put it onto Twitter. Tom, if you could do that a favor and find that on Twitter and then just retweet it. What's our Twitter account, by the way?
Well, that's such a good-looking question. Thank you very much for asking that. We are at the Long Box Guys.
So I think another reason why by both of the big two are losing market share is also the influx of new creators and new titles from independents, because publishing is becoming so much easier for an independent now that there's a lot more competition, and some of that competition is really, really high quality, and it really is eating into the big two market share. So I think it's very simplistic for Marvel to say, oh, we've diversified, and you know the reason for us losing market share is because we've made all these female characters, when really, you know, they've been losing market share for a really long time, and it has hardly anything to do with the fact that they changed the characters. They were doing it before they made some of these switches. It just, you know, they've done a lot of things to upset their Marvel fan base by changing all the characters people love. And now they're changing them and they're doing all these other things that we've already talked about. And it's kind of like, well, you know, you also have a lot of competition that's really good and people have limited dollars.
Right, but to address your issue, DC hasn't lost its market share. It's actually been doing really well ever since Rebirth kicked up. Their sales have increased. But that's either here or there. Let's move on to plugs, shall we? Josh, you got anybody to plug?
Yeah, I'm going to plug Friendly Neighborhood Comics. You can meet that Sasha Banks from WWE there on the 14th of April at 3:30 p.m. on a Friday afternoon. They're great. FriendlyComics.com. And I got to tell you, that place is clean.
Awesome. And we should always thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music. You can go check them out at KirbyCrackleMusic.com or go to iTunes or Bandcamp. I also want to say happy birthday to our listener, John, in Uganda, who is celebrating his birthday this week. And he has also written us a letter asking for sidekicks. So we will try to do some sidekick episodes in the near future. LT, what do you got for us?
I've got a plug. As always, I would like to plug IanLino.com.
IanLino.com.
IanLino.com. I only said that because Tom's not here.
And I didn't expect you to say it, Josh, because you never say it. IanLino.com. IanLino.com. Purveyor of fine T-shirts, stained glass prints, and other geeky things like the Johnny Skywalker rocks glass that I'm drinking my scotch out of.
All right, and we should also give another shout-out for Suit Up for Kids, a great nonprofit. You can find them on Twitter at Suit Up for Kids, or at Suit Up for Kids. And you can also find them on Facebook if you do a search for Suit Up for the number 4 Kids. Anybody got anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
Really?
I feel pretty good.
Let me ask you about that national park. Was that your sector?
I got to tell you, the White Mountains of New Hampshire are not my sector.
And LT, what are Comic-Cons like to you?
They're kind of like a farmer's market for geeks.
Awesome catchphrase, dude. I agree with the last writer who said you have the best catchphrase. For me, our podcast is like drunk history for comic books. And remember what Tom always says. Don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love. We'll see you guys next week on The Long Box, guys.
I've seen the lights, I've seen the lights of Megaton. I shut it off, I turn it off. An atom bomb, they worship time and I don't know. I got the skills to keep me out of danger. Would you believe it that I almost drowned while crossing a bridge and shot out by some raiders? You know they're making it hard for me. I trade the past for bottle caps. Way of the gun, a bit boy's work is never done. I got the skills to keep me out of danger. Would you believe it that I almost drowned while crossing a bridge and shot out by some raiders? You know they're making it hard for me.
I should stop having sex.
I think we can all agree, yes. But why?
Which reason are you talking about?